Un vidrio grande de vino blanco y una cerveza grande, por favor. Having spoken, I leant back into the reassuring clasp of the low backrest of the tall chrome bar stool. I sparked up a gasper. I was relaxed, yet confident. You okay, oh, Sandra? Yeah, never better. I swiveled round, just a bit. You sure? Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Happy New Year. Why'd you ask? You know just all of those drinks in Spanish? Yeah, what of it? We're in Italy. Oh, what a shame. Bar and pub etiquette can be a confusing business, but using the wrong language is, to my mind, a clear breach of the rules. Sadly, it's one which the Brits abroad seem to demolish with an inebriated and unashamed delight, but it ain't for me. My brother-in-law, CJ, is a seasoned campaigner. Over the last 20, well, Christ, nearly 30 years, I've spent more hours engaged in the bending of the elbow with him than just about anybody else. Last Christmas, I asked him when he'd had his last dry day. A what? You know, CJ, alcohol-free. I mean, what's the longest you've gone without a drink? His reply? Never. I've had at least two or three pints of beer and a bottle of red wine every night of my adult life. Now, I wouldn't describe CJ as a man with a drink problem. He's not an indolent piss artist. He's a busy man, who, unlike the villains who pepper my novels None of Your Business and On the Firm, actually lives up to the work hard, play hard thing and doesn't just lean on it as a prop of convenient management speak. And CJ has a clear set of rules about pubs and publicans. The landlord's place is not on the golf course or upstairs or in the kitchen or anywhere else but behind the bar, where his role is that of mine host. Ideally, the landlord will have a large belly, mutton chop whiskers, a check shirt and a red face. Any other help should be of the large-breasted, short-skirted female variety. Leaning on the bar by the staff while reading a paper or watching the television, God forbid, is strictly forbidden, as is hanging out with their mates and viewing the professionals on the other side of the bar with youthful disdain. The faint rustle of a punter's banknote from anything up to 30 feet away must be met with instant eagerness to fill those sparkling fresh pint glasses. Whose round is it? He who walks in should be bought a drink by those already in situ, I think. Dodging one's turn by hiding in the toilet is obviously heinous behaviour deserving of nothing less than excommunication, as is having pints for yourself on everyone else's round and halves on your own. Anyway, I'm sure we all have our own additions to the list, the laws of the drink. Here's one. Had to meet some people some years ago. Family thing, hadn't come across most of them before. And it was agreed we'd all have a drink early one summer Saturday evening in London's busy Covent Garden. I was introduced to the, well, I suppose he was the fellow elder statesman of the group. What's everyone having, I asked conveniently. Pints for you? You, gin and tonic, large one of course, yep. Wine's over here, vodka there, scotch, whatever. Bit of a crowd was in, it seems. I just got everyone organised with a drink, when my fellow old geezer turned to me and said, thanks for the drinks. Must all be off now though, got tickets for a show. Thus departed the sated hordes, leaving me and the wife surveying the detritus of a large round in a Covent Garden pub, which, as any fool know, is equivalent to about 3 months of mortgage repayments. It's just not dumb, I muttered. Well, they had tickets for a show, said Sandra. Then you don't get into a round, I said. It's not that the wounds are still deep, they've just about healed. It's not even about the money. What bothers me still is that a man of my age didn't realise that what he was doing was so plainly wrong. Anyway, don't miss next week's episode when I'll be talking to Tony Blair. Background music, this week a Jeff Palmer, Chris Kirkham co-production.